it takes people to kind of link arms with an organization like Forgotten Children and say, hey, we have a voice, and I can't do it by myself and you can't do it by yourself. But if we link arms, we can go out and make a difference in these girls' life. And then also bringing up boys that say, hey, this is also not okay. And bringing up men of courage and honor for them to learn that.
Human trafficking doesn't always take the form we first imagine. It can be found at almost any level of an organization's supply chain. What can compliance professionals do to assess human trafficking risk, and how can they leverage the resources of the organizations they work for to help root out this tragic problem? Gwen Hassan is here to help. This is Hidden Traffic.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Traffic. I am Gwen Hassan, and I'm very excited today to have with me Cody Kumpfer. And Cody is the Associate Executive Director for Forgotten Children. Hi, Cody. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Gwen. I appreciate it and excited to get a chance to spend a little time with you and your listeners today.
You are welcome. Thank you. So let's just jump right in. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be working in the area of kind of human trafficking prevention broadly, but also working with children specifically as it relates to some of the countries that you work in.
So from Indiana, Bluffton, Indiana, Austin, Indiana is where I'm from. I'm married with three kids, eight and under. And
Oh my, you're in the thick of it right now.
married my high school sweetheart, and thankful to be married to a special lady, Ashley. So when I graduated high school and I started my career in banking as I was going to college, continued to go through that career, became a business and ag banker. And so I worked with passionate farmers and business people, essentially working on their financial picture and trying to be an advisor for them. Went on my first trip with Forgotten Children in 2017, had two young kids at home at the time. A friend of mine who is my Sunday school teacher at church, Matt Hartzell, he asked me to go on a trip. So I went home and talked to my wife, and I always said I wanted to go to Africa, but never knew when or where or how that was actually going to practically happen.
Yeah.
So he asked me to go to Malawi and Zimbabwe. And so I went home and talked to my wife and was coming up with all kinds of excuses not to go. She says, you know what, if you're not going to do it now, when would you do it? Why wouldn't you go? So I was thankful for her push, and I chose to go then in 2017. And what was really neat was, as I was on that trip, God just continued to work in my heart, and I'd be driving down the road and just tears coming to my eyes, watching kids walk alongside the road with no shoes and just the clothes on their back. And I'm thinking to myself, why aren't these kids in school, or where are their parents at? And so as I talk with our partners over there, and they're like, well, maybe their parents are working. Maybe they don't have parents and they're walking to wherever they need to go. And the reason they're not in school is because they don't have enough money to go to school. I just continued to break my heart while I was over there, and seeing what Forgotten Children was doing, I got passionate about it, got excited about it. And so I came back and joined a volunteer board within Forgotten Children. Mm-hmm. A few years later, I was asked to be on the board of directors on more of the fiduciary responsibility side. And so I continued to get excited about it. And then in 2019, I went on a trip to Uganda with the team, a vision trip. And then the executive director, Matt Hartzell, who was my Sunday school teacher and friend, he asked me, he said, hey, will you come and work with us full time? It's like, I don't know. not really my plan, but I love the organization and always be a financial supporter of it. But God has different plans for our life sometimes. So as I continue to pray through it, a lot of things happened that I felt like God led up to that point. Had a couple other job opportunities and just felt like God, I think this maybe is the next step. And he was affirming all of those things. So I chose to make the jump in March of 2021.
Congratulations.
And so that's what kind of gets me excited about it. Cause I felt like, do I want to be about just gathering more stuff, or do I want to be part of the stories that can impact people? And if I can continue to bring more and more people along that journey, that's what I wanted to be about and wanted my life to be about. So I get to educate people about vulnerable kids around the world every day. And I'm thankful to be able to do that.
Yeah, I love the saying, man plans and God laughs, which is often the case where you think you've got a plan for your life, but you know, as you go along, if you listen carefully, often to your own heart, there are signs that you should be moving in a different direction or that you're being nudged in a direction that you wouldn't have expected. So bravo to you for listening to that and following the path that felt right to you.
I think it's really easy to just go along and say things, but I think actions are really loud. And so for me, I wanted to actually go do something instead of just talking about it all the time.
That's a great segue to talking about what you're doing. So tell our listeners a bit about Forgotten Children, kind of what the mission is. I know you're working all over. You've mentioned Uganda and Malawi, but I know you're also in Nepal and Zimbabwe and India and Kenya. So tell us a bit about the organization.
Yeah, a couple of those countries that you mentioned, we've been in them in the past and we're not currently working there, but the countries we're currently in is India and Nepal and Malawi and Uganda. What we do is we essentially go alongside and partner with indigenous leaders, whether those are pastors or just business leaders who are passionate about orphan care. When they read scripture, they see the mandate of taking care of the orphan and the widow, and they take it seriously, but they just sometimes don't have the resources to take care of them as much as they would like to.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is we come alongside them and lift them up in those ways, and we're kind of a support system for them. And so we do that through child sponsorship. So the sponsorship structure is $38 a month, and a family here in the U.S. can sponsor a child and help them through that journey. There's other things that we do. We come alongside them and do some self-sustainability as well, some different projects to help them be sustainable. We've built orphan homes. We've helped with some farming operation, a farrow to finish pig operation, seeing different ways that we can help those partners be successful in what they do. And everything that we do, we kind of intertwine a relationship with Jesus. And so we're teaching them that their Heavenly Father is crazy about them. And so we're walking alongside them in those paths to do that.
As I understand the mission, because we talked a little bit before this call, you were talking about the idea of preventing human trafficking through empowerment and through empowering people really in a grassroots way, teaching them, giving them lines of work that they can work in, educating them. Is that a correct way to characterize the kind of focus? Is that you're as much focused on preventing future issues where people are taken advantage of or in underpower situations as you are to improving their current conditions, right? It's both.
Yeah, we do a couple of things. And the protection piece is we just try to take them out of harm's way. So we help give them a safe place to live, make sure that their caretakers have the ability to take care of them. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's putting them in an orphan home, or sometimes that is in kinship care, kind of a similar foster care system, and making sure that those caretakers have what they need. But as we do that, we also want to make sure that they get dental and medical checkups on a regular basis to protect be healthy. But you can't just take care of that and not think about, okay, what about their education? Because kids are not going to be able to be successful as they get older if they're not educated. And so we help provide them schooling. That's a big part of what that $38 a month goes to, is the education piece. Because again, if a child graduates or maybe doesn't graduate from high school, then they're not going to have ability to earn money. And so what's going to happen is women are typically taken advantage of, and they get pregnant at a young age, or they get forced to be married. And so we want to make sure that that's not happening. And the other piece of it is sometimes you have a mom that has maybe three kids, and she has to make a choice of, hey, I can only really financially afford to take care of two of those. And so I'm going to sell one of them to be able to help support the two that I have.
And they're often sold to a trafficker, right?
Exactly. Yeah. She may not know that, may not think that it's trafficking, because she's been told that they're going to have a better life and they're going to be able to have opportunities that she can't provide. And so she thinks it's the right thing to do, and they are trafficked at that point. So we want to make sure that parents and families are not put in that situation. So we want to take the burden off of them by helping them with the child to be able to part of that success in that kid's life.
There was an article that came out, it was mid-pandemic, so probably 21-ish, about a father who had sold his daughter, who was maybe 11, but he had four other children and she was the oldest. And it was a horror, just torture to read, because you could tell that he was tortured and he felt really horrible about sending his daughter off to work. But he truly believed, hey, I'm giving her a better life too, because now she's going to have all these opportunities and I'll have enough money to feed her siblings. And luckily an NGO, not dissimilar from your own, got involved and helped to educate the father. Hey, no, she doesn't get more opportunities this way. In fact, she's likely to be tortured and or raped and, you know, all the horrible things. And they managed to pay off this father's debt to keep the child from being trafficked. So the organizations like yours in the world are really doing amazing work. And I'm so honored to hear about what you're doing as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, sometimes they have to sell their child to pay a dowry, or they have to pay off a bonded labor debt. And so then they have to sell their child into that long-term bonded labor. That's just the reality of it. We heard a story not too far away from our flagship ministry in Uganda in Makono that a mother sold her child for $2.50.
Oh.
So it's not like they're making a bunch of money. It's $2.50 and sold her child. If we think about that, that's just the desperate situations that some of these families are in.
Oh, yeah.
And people are taking advantage of it.
Well, thank goodness for your work. And hopefully this podcast raises some more kind of visibility to your work and gets some other people who want to help sponsor children and prevent that. So you mentioned when we talked some of the work that your organization is doing, and I know I'm going to pronounce this wrong with, is it Devadasis? Is
that the Devadasis.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the Devadasi is it's kind of a long-term tradition in India. It was a very... People, they were excited to be a Devadasi. Women were excited to be a Devadasi because it was a privilege. It was an honor to do that years ago. But that has continued to change. And essentially now they're pretty much become a temple prostitute, in lack of better terms. It's what happened. And so what happens is, if your mama is a Devadasi and your grandma's a Devadasi, as a young girl, you're probably going to be a Devadasi. At the young age, they essentially dedicate them to the temple and the goddess Yamala. And they are essentially forced to become into that lifestyle. And so we want to protect those girls from that. So we had a team actually in 2018 that went to India. They went to one of these temples out on the steps. There was a young girl she's probably 13, 14 years old, and she was just starting to become officially of age and was just dedicated. And she's starting her work as a Devadasi. So she was actually out on the steps collecting offerings. Big smile on her face, so excited about her new life. Okay. And then just literally steps away, there was an older lady kind of discarded because her time as a Devadasi was over. And she just looks so tired and so exhausted. And now she is now considered to be an untouchable out of caste. And so she has nothing else that she can do besides sit there and just hopefully people give her money. And so that life, we kind of saw the beginning of it and the end of it. And it was just really hard to see that happen.
All within a few feet of each other too.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. On similar steps. What is really cool is just down the road, one of our partners is currently doing a girl empowerment program. So he's bringing in some of these girls out of that lifestyle where they would become Devadasis. But we're bringing them into this girl empowerment program to make sure that they're educated, that they don't have to live this life. And that they are educated, that they have value, that they can go out and make something themselves and they don't have to do this. And so by giving them that education, we're going to give them a voice. And I think that's at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is making sure that we can give them an opportunity to go on and be successful and not have to live this life of servicing men several times a day. And at the end of the day, it takes people to fix this problem. And it takes people to kind of link arms with an organization like Forgotten Children and say, hey, we have a voice and I can't do it by myself and you can't do it by yourself. But if we link arms, we can go out and make a difference in these girls' life. And then also bringing up boys that say, hey, this is also not okay. And bringing up men of courage and honor for them to learn that.
So glad you bring in that other, you know, side of the equation here too, because I feel like so often the focus is on, you know, the victims. But there's got to be people in the world who are talking to the, I don't know what you would call it, maybe the demand side of the equation too, and saying, no, this is not all right. And this is not how the next generation is going to be raised to be. But more to the point, I think what excites me the most about your kind of model is that you're really doing human trafficking prevention work, whether you realize it or not. I mean, you're getting in there and pulling people up and giving them options for moving forward where they don't have to be taken advantage of, where they don't have to be trafficked, put into forced labor situations where they're less vulnerable than they would be if your organization didn't exist.
I think a big part of it is that we don't want to just stop at getting them the education. We want to give them job skills so they can actually then go on and earn income or start their own business or be able to have a tailoring degree or a hospitality degree. So then they can actually go be successful. And then we have boys that are graduating with trade school and girls that are graduating with trade school degrees. So they can go and be mechanics and welders and to be able to go earn an income and change that trajectory of their life. Because if we don't do that and we just give them an education through high school and we let them, okay, go figure it out.
Yeah.
We failed them. And I think they're going to be more likely to be trafficked at that point. And so Absolutely. We need to help make sure that we're setting them up well.
It's that teach a man to fish model, which is, you know, that really you're teaching people to be self-sufficient, which then also gives them a level of self-respect and resiliency that they wouldn't have otherwise. So bravo. It's fantastic. I don't know if you knew this, but part of the reason I started doing this podcast is it was many years ago. I now have a daughter who's in her mid-20s, but at the time that I heard a speaker from an NGO, she was 11. And the story he told was about being in India. And he was working in the UN doing kind of AIDS prevention work and was mapping the pandemic within kind of the brothel network within India and came across an 11-year-old girl that was in the brothel who clung to his leg and begged and cried for him to please help her and to take her out because she had been sold there to work in the brothel. So when I heard that as the mother of an 11-year-old at the time, I thought, I can't do nothing. There's got to be something that I can do to help here. So my side has been kind of the business side and helping companies figure out how they can prevent these conditions for their workers, how they can empower their workers, pay them fairly, make sure they're not being trafficked and used and forced into labor. But the other side of that equation is yours. And I really appreciate that there's people like you who are working at the front end as well. So thank you very much. Any final thoughts you want to share with us?
Yeah. And I think that is a good reminder of if it was your daughter in line to be a Devadasi, wouldn't you want somebody to say, hey, you have a better opportunity. You can do something different with your life.
Yeah. Or
you have a young child that, I mean, when you look at Uganda, 9 out of 10 girls have been sexually abused.
Oh.
And so how do you walk alongside these girls and give them trauma counseling, give them mentorship so they know that they're valuable? And that they're valuable in our eyes and they're valuable in God's eyes. And I think that's what we just want to continue to share with the kids that we're interacting with on a daily basis. And we're thankful for our partners that are definitely in the trenches and giving them that mentoring, the counseling, the discipleship, and making sure that they're cared for and they're loved.
I think it's especially notable that you're working with the Indigenous leaders. Some organizations will walk in with kind of a we know best and we'll tell you how to do this model, which can also create a lot of pushback and a lot of resentment. Whereas if you're working with the local Indigenous people and supporting them, I think you're setting yourselves up for success. So
yeah,
bravo.
And it comes down to a young child is not going to open up to a guy like me. They're going to open up to a lady like Kathy, who is one of our partners, or Deeza, or James. I mean, you can go on and on down the list. They're going to open up to the people of their community that they're seeing every single day.
Yeah.
And so that's where the success will happen.
Thank you so much, Cody, for joining me. If people want to learn more about Forgotten Children, where can they do that or where can they reach you?
If they want to go to www.forgottenchildren.org, there's more information there. There's a contact us page and just say, Cody, call me and put your phone number and I'll reach out. Or my email is cody@forgottenchildren.org. That would be another great opportunity where I'd love to connect and meet up with anybody who would be interested to learn more about the organization, but also be willing to get involved and link arms with us. Because again, like I said earlier, we can't do it alone. We need people that are passionate, that are willing to step up and be part of the change.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gwen. Appreciate what you do.